Okay, well, thank you very much, everybody, for sticking around. So this is going to be a little bit of a shift of gears. I was supposed to talk tomorrow morning, which would be my natural home for this, but I had to leave tomorrow. So thank you very much to Chetan for accommodating me on this. So what I'd like to tell you about are topological insulators and Majorana fermions. And so I'm going to start off with a little bit of an introduction to topological insulators and topological superconductivity, and we'll sort of see how Majorana fermions come out of that. And so as Shankar said this morning, so the topological insulators may be a route towards engineering Majorana fermions. And so after I do that, then this sort of raised a number of issues that I'd like to discuss. And in particular, it led to the issue of how one can topologically classify defects in insulators and superconductors. And this led to a sort of a minor modification or generalization of the beautiful periodic table for topological insulators and superconductors. And this also led to another issue, which is that there's a sense in which the topological defects that support Majorana fermions in these systems exhibit non-abelian statistics, even though they are moving around can move around in three dimensions. So this work has been, you know, over the years I've collaborated with Jean Malie and my students Liang Fu and Jeffrey Teo, and so I'd like to thank them. And then I'd like to sort of echo many of the other speakers, and to thank Mike for his infectious enthusiasm and for you know, the way he's given us focus in our field, and so that's happy birthday to Mike. So let me start with topological band theory, and so in solid state physics, the simplest way of describing the electronic structure of a material is called band theory. Okay, and so this is really one of the triumphs of quantum mechanics in the last century. And so what a band theory is, though, is it's a Hamiltonian, a one-body Hamiltonian, which is parameterized by the momentum K that lives in a Brillouin zone, which really is a torus. So the way I can think of a band structure is it's a mapping from a Brillouin zone to a Hamiltonian that has a spectrum that has an energy gap that separates the occupied states from the empty states. Okay, and so the key here is that there is an energy gap separating the occupied states and the empty states. And so the sort of amazing fact is that these mappings or these band structures fall into distinct topological classes, and the mathematics for describing those topological classes pointed out by David Thallus and his collaborators, and so it's called the first Chern number, which characterizes this mapping. And so what Thallus and his collaborators realized is that the first Chern number characterizes the integer quantum Hall effect, and so the quantized Hall conductivity in the integer quantum Hall effect, the integer really is this topological invariant. Now, so the consequence, the most important consequence of this topological classification of band theories occurs when one has interfaces between materials which have different topological invariants. So, for instance, if one has the integer quantum Hall effect at nu equals 1, which has n equals 1, next to an insulator, then on the boundary between these materials, then one is guaranteed to have electronic excitations that cross the Fermi energy. Okay, and so these electronic states sort of cross the Fermi energy in a very special way, in that they sort of cross with a positive slope. And so these electronic states have a group velocity which is positive, which means that these electronic states are propagating in only one direction. And so it's sort of a one-way street for the electrons that are propagating along these edges. And so this is a famous old story of the edge states in the integer quantum Hall effect. And so what you can see from this is that if you think about this band that connects the conduction band and the valence band, there's no way to get rid of it. You can imagine, you know, pulling the band down or doing whatever you want. But there's, short of making this bulk energy gap close, there's no way you can change this. So the number of these chiral Dirac fermion modes that are bound to this interface is a topologically protected quantity. Okay? And so there's a correspondence between this number of chiral edge modes, which is a property of an interface, and the difference between the topological invariants that characterize the bulk, say two-dimensional electronic states. Okay, and so this correspondence between the bulk and the boundary sort of plays a fundamental role in this topological classification of electronic states. So for 20 years it was thought that this was sort of the only topological, kind of topological state that one can have. And more recently, we've realized that there are more topological classes if one incorporates symmetries into the problem. And so the key symmetry that I want to focus on is time reversal symmetry, which leads to the notion of a Z2 topological insulator. And so time reversal symmetry is a symmetry that the Hamiltonian has. And so under time reversal, the momentum goes to minus the momentum. And so what time reversal symmetry does is it relates the Hamiltonian at plus k to the Hamiltonian at minus k. And so those become related to each other. And this time reversal symmetry is a kind of a funny anti-unitary operator that involves complex conjugation. And so it might not be surprising that if we add a constraint to the Hamiltonian, there might be a richer topological structure of the possible topological classes that Hamiltonians could have. And indeed, that's the case. And the way that that one can understand that, really follows from what's called Cramer's theorem. And so time reversal symmetry has this property that if you do it twice, then it squares to minus one. And this is my favorite minus sign. I always tell my students this is my favorite minus sign in physics, and it's the same minus sign that happens when you rotate a spin by 2 pi, and it picks up a minus sign. Okay, so the consequence of this minus sign, however, is that every electronic state has to be twofold degenerate. Okay, and so from this fact, one can understand why there are different topological classes of time reversal invariant Hamiltonians, and in particular, why there are two and only two classes. Okay, and so let me show you this sort of poor man's way of understanding why there is a Z2 topological classification. And so the idea is to think about the electronic states on the edge of a two-dimensional system. And so I'm again going to plot the electronic states as a function of the momentum. And now since the electronic states have to be Cramer's degenerate, there are special momenta where, like, k equals zero, where k and minus k are the same point, and at those points, the electronic states have to be twofold degenerate. Okay, and so one's guaranteed to have Cramer's degeneracies at these points. It turns out also at k equals pi, the pi and minus pi are the same point as well, and so these points have to be degenerate. And so one can understand, therefore, that now when one moves away from k equals zero or k equals pi, in general, these Cramer's degenerate states will split because this guy's partner is at minus k. Okay, and so now you can see that there are two ways that the Cramer's pairs at zero can match up with the Cramer's pairs at pi. Either they can match up like this, where they're sort of connected in pairs. In this case, it's sort of a trivial case because you can imagine getting rid of these edge states. On the other hand, if they do a partner switch, then there's no way you can get rid of these. You can pull these up and down all you want. You can't get rid of these. Okay? And so if you're willing to, so these two are topologically distinct in the same way that the chiral edge states that I showed you on the last view graph are topologically, you know, protected. Okay? And so if you are willing to believe that there's a correspondence between the bulk topological order and the edge structure, then you can believe that there's a that time reversal invariant band structures have a Z2. There are two topological classes. Okay, and so in fact that's the case. In two dimensions, there's a Z2 topological invariant that distinguishes a topological invariant a topological insulator. And in that case, the way you can sort of understand it is that, you know, so you have these bands that cross each other at k equals zero, and it's sort of like one has this degeneracy where this is like a Dirac point, where you have these linearly dispersing bands which could be described by a Dirac equation. Okay, and so in general, what you expect if you have a Z2 topological insulator is that the edge states are filled up such that the Fermi surface encloses an odd number of these Dirac points. Okay, and if it's an odd number, then it's topologically protected. It can't be zero. So this is on the edge of a two-dimensional topological insulator. Similar thing can happen on the surface of a three-dimensional topological insulator. Again, on the surface, you can have pictures that look like this that connect this sort of special time reversal invariant momentum points. And in this case, one can have a circular Fermi surface that encloses, again, an odd number of these two-dimensional Dirac points. And this is what occurs on the surface of a two-dimensional topological insulator. And this is a very special state because, in a sense, it's like half of an ordinary two-dimensional electron system. Ordinarily, at each point on the Fermi surface, you have both up and down spin electrons. Whereas here the spin sort of is locked to the momentum, and so for each k on the surface, Fermi surface, there's only one momentum, and so this is like half of an ordinary ordinary two-dimensional electron system, and that one half plays a fundamental role in what follows. So this is the way one can describe a topological insulator. The thing which has made this be interesting in the last few years is the fact that these materials actually exist in the real world. So in particular, the two-dimensional state. So we first sort of stumbled on this physics thinking about graphene. It turns out graphene is not the best place to look for it. The better place to look for it was discovered by Xucheng Zhang and his collaborators, mercury, cadmium, telluride quantum wells, which were then fabricated by Lawrence Mollenkamp from Würzburg, and they did beautiful experiments where they were able to, by probing electronic transport, they were able to measure the electronic transport in the edge states that are predicted in the quantum spin hall insulator. Okay. For the three-dimensional surface states, so there are a number of materials that are three-dimensional topological insulators. Again, the first one we thought about was an alloy of bismuth and antimony. The nicest ones are bismuth selenide and bismuth telluride. And there's now so since these materials were discovered a couple years ago, there's been an explosion of activity of people trying to do experiments probing these. So this is angle resolved photo emission data which basically you can read this data is the energy as a function of momentum of the surface states. And so this is the Dirac point, the single Dirac point that occurs in bismuth selenide. So this is really sort of a textbook Dirac electronic structure of the surface states of bismuth selenide. Okay. So this is the Z2 topological insulator. Similar ideas can be applied to superconductors. Okay. And in the sort of BCS mean field theory of a superconductor, one can describe the superconductor in terms of a single particle Hamiltonian that looks sort of like a band structure. The only difference is that this Hamiltonian sort of mixes the particles and the holes. Okay, and so this Bogoliubov-Degen Hamiltonian sort of has this extra twist that there are anomalous terms that couple the particles and the holes. So because of this, the Bogoliubov-Degen Hamiltonian, when you write it down, it's actually redundant. So this means that the Bogoliubov-Dejean Hamiltonian has an intrinsic symmetry that says that every eigenstate of the Hamiltonian at plus energy has a partner at negative energy. Okay, and so there's a particle-hole symmetry that occurs, and so this this symmetry relates the Bogoliubov-Dejean Hamiltonian at k to the Bogoliubov-Dejean Hamiltonian at minus k. So this constraint, this symmetry, sort of behaves in a way like the time reversal symmetry. It's a constraint on the structure, and so one can ask whether this constraint leads to interesting topological classes as well. And in fact, it does. And the way you can think about that is that because we have this this particle hole symmetry that says that the electronic states have to come in pairs, you can think about, so the simplest thing to think about is what happens if you have a one-dimensional superconductor. And in a one-dimensional superconductor, the boundary is zero-dimensional. It occurs at the end. And so one can ask, well, what is the spectrum of zero-dimensional states, bound states, that occur at the end of a one-dimensional superconductor? Now, so we're guaranteed that the states at positive energy and negative energy come in pairs, okay? And but there's a possibility that there could be a state at zero energy that is its own partner, okay? And so this state at zero energy is very special. This is the Majorana fermion bound state that would occur, that can occur. And so now there are going to be two types of one-dimensional superconductors. They're going to be those that that have this zero mode at the end, and those that don't. Okay, and again, if you believe in the correspondence between the boundary topological structure and the bulk topological structure, then there should be two classes of superconductors. There's the trivial superconductor and the topological superconductor in one dimension. Okay. Does capital psi square to? I mean, this is an operator. Capital psi. I'm sorry. Capital psi squares to plus one. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Good. Yeah. So one thing I'll say about this zero mode state is that, you know, one consequence of this particle hole symmetry is that the states at positive and negative energy are redundant. So adding a particle in the particle hole in the positive energy state is the same state as removing a particle in the negative energy state. And this redundancy means that the zero mode is its own antiparticle, and that is what a Majorana fermion is.
Okay.
Okay. So these ideas of you know, classifying sort of band structures, if you will, subject to symmetries, have a beautiful generalization that was worked out by Alexei Kateyev and Schneider, Ryu, Furusaki, and Ludwig. And so the idea here is that one can characterize a system by its symmetries, either by time reversal symmetry, which maybe squares to plus or minus one, or by particle hole symmetry, which could also square to plus or minus one. And then maybe you have both of them, and so there would be a chiral symmetry. And so there are all these different classes that correspond to the different possible symmetries you can have, and then there are different dimensions that you can imagine. And so these all sort of fit into this beautiful mathematical structure. And so let me just point out, so this is the integer Chern number that occurs in the quantum Hall effect in two dimensions when there are no symmetries, and then one can have the time reversal symmetry that squares to minus one gives you the Z2 topological insulators in two and three dimensions. And then for the superconducting case, when you have a one-dimensional superconductor, a topological superconductor has this Z2. Okay, and so this is you know, sort of a very, very beautiful generalization of this. Now, what I want to focus on, though, is the Majorana fermion that occurs at the end of this one-dimensional topological superconductor. And this is really, I think, for many of this is the a major goal to be able to engineer a Meyer on a fermion in the real world. And so this is supposed to be the holy grail here. So there are many different ways that one might be able to get this, and of course this all originated with the Moore-Reed fractional quantum Hall state, and the realization by Reed and Green that that this can be understood in terms of a vortex in a two-dimensional spinless P plus IP superconductor, or it could be the end state of a one-dimensional spinless superconductor. Okay, and so so what we know is that these ideas are then connected to the idea of topological quantum computation. So these states have a degeneracy which is topologically protected, and so this can be a topologically protected quantum memory, which then, if one can move these states around, then one has a way of doing some quantum computation. And so the goal then is, how can we engineer these states? And the problem is that topological superconductors sort of don't come for free. Okay, So how can one engineer a topological superconductor? And the problem is the following. In ordinary superconductors, you have both up and down spins, and the up and down spins sort of both pair with each other. And so that gives you a trivial superconductor, unlike a spinless superconductor where there's only one state at each K. Okay? And so this spinless P plus IP superconductor is, again, it's sort of like half of an ordinary superconductor. And so the goal is, how can we engineer half of a ordinary superconductor? And so this is where the idea we had of using a topological insulator, and in a sense, using a topological insulator and an ordinary superconductor. And in a sense, what our idea was to have the superconductor come from the ordinary superconductor and have the topological come from the insulator. So the point here is that the surface state of a topological insulator is sort of like half of an ordinary, it only has half the degrees of freedom of a metal. And so if you put a superconductor on top so that the superconductivity from the bulk superconductor can leak into the surface, then the superconducting state of the surface states sort of resembles the P plus IP superconductor. Okay, but it's a little bit different. It's different because, unlike the P plus IP superconductor, the topological insulator superconducting state does not violate time reversal symmetry. Okay, and that's actually important. So, for example, in the presence of disorder, if you have time reversal symmetry, superconductivity is protected by what's called Anderson's theorem. And so the superconducting state at the surface of a topological insulator is really immune to disorder, whereas if you break time reversal symmetry, then Anderson's theorem breaks down. But in any case, so this is this non-trivial superconducting state of the surface is a way of getting the Meyer on a fermion bound states. Okay, so there are various ways that one can get these Meyer on a fermion bound states. So one way one can imagine doing it is to have a superconductor on top of a topological insulator with a vortex or a thread, an H over 2E flux, and you get this zero mode bound to the flux. There are other ways of engineering it as well. So, for instance, you could take the two-dimensional topological insulator that has edge states. You could make the edge states superconducting. That opens up a superconducting energy gap. Or you could put them in proximity with a magnet, which opens a magnetic energy gap. And what one can show is that the interface between these two regions, where one has these different kinds of masses, binds a zero energy, a zero mode. In addition, one could also engineer one-dimensional Meyer on a fermions on interfaces on the surface of a topological insulator. So, for instance, if you have a topological insulator, if you make it superconducting, and then you have, again, a magnetic region, then on this one-dimensional interface will be bound a chiral Majorana fermion, which is it's sort of like half of an edge state of a quantum Hall edge state. Or if one makes a Josephson junction, a linear Josephson junction on the surface of a topological insulator, then one can make a non-chiral Majorana fermion when the phase difference across this is equal to pi. So one starting with a three-dimensional system, one makes a two-dimensional interface state, and then one can make it a one-dimensional linear state. And if you're having trouble swallowing this, so Nick Reed assured me today that this is somehow related to Greg Moore's talk this morning. So maybe that helps a little bit. I don't know. All right. So, but this raises an issue, which is, what is it that guarantees that I have these zero modes? So these modes that I'm having, they're not occurring on the boundary of something. Rather, they're occurring in some sort of heterostructure where you have, things are moving in three dimensions. And so this led to a sort of a more general question, which is, what is it that guarantees that I have these zero modes when they're not the boundary? Okay, so the simplest example of that is just a vortex in a two-dimensional topological superconductor. Okay, and so we know that if we have a vortex, there's going to be a zero mode. But what you'd like to say is that so this vortex is some topological defect in the two-dimensional system, and what I'd like to say is that if I know the Hamiltonian everywhere surrounding this topological defect, by looking at that Hamiltonian, I should be able to tell that there is a zero mode enclosed. Okay? And so that's what I expect. And so so this led to the problem of trying to classify then families of Hamiltonians parameterized by a spatial parameter which goes around the defect. And so in order to make progress on this, I want to make an approximation, okay? And so this approximation is that the Hamiltonian is varying slowly as I go around this circle. And so what that allows me to do is to characterize the Hamiltonian as a function of both K and this position. So I have a family of band structures where I have H of K, where K is in the two-dimensional Brillouin zone, and S, where S is going around this this circle. Okay, and so now we have a more general topological classification. Rather than just classifying a band structure, we're classifying a family of band structures. And so one can do this in some generality. So now one can ask, well, let's suppose we have band structures and they're subject to symmetries, either particle hole like symmetries or time reversal symmetries. Now, these anti-unitary symmetries behave differently on K than they do on R. Okay, so the anti-unitary symmetries switch the momentum, but they don't switch the R. And so we want to classify Hamiltonians subject to these symmetries in various dimensionalities of the number of R's and the number of K's. And so what this allows us to do then is to classify different kinds of defects in different dimensionalities. So for instance, when capital D is equal to zero, so I don't have any R's, then what I'm just doing is I'm classifying the boundaries of systems. So this should be the same as classifying the band structures. But when D equals 1, then that corresponds to classifying a point defect in 2 dimensions or a line defect in 3 dimensions. Or when D is equal to 2, that corresponds to classifying a point defect in 3 dimensions. And so what we expect is that the topological classes of these families of Hamiltonians should be reflected by the protected modes that are bound to the defect. Okay, and so this is sort of a generalization of this bulk to boundary correspondence. And so if you accept that generalization, then things really should be pretty simple because the defects really only care about the dimensionality of the defect. And so what one expects then is that line defects shouldn't care whether they're on the edge of a two-dimensional system or a line, living on a three-dimensional system, and likewise for point defects. And so what this says is that the periodic table has a simple generalization to describe topological defects, where it depends only on this difference of dimension, this difference which is really telling you the dimensionality of the defect. Okay, and so that's a slight generalization of this table. Excuse me? The 2z's just has to do with how this z is related to this z. Yeah.
Can I think that this is twisted KR theory of a torus plus experiment?
I think so, though that this is a little bit above my pay grade, but yeah. Okay. All right. Now, So for instance, if going back to the Majoranas, so we have these various ways of thinking about of realizing Majorana zero-dimensional Majorana bound states. So for instance, as a vortex in a two-dimensional topological superconductor, and so one can imagine, so one can write down a formula for this topological invariant, which again depends on K and R. So one can then imagine trying to evaluate this Z2 invariant in a topological superconductor. And what one finds if one does that this Z2 invariant is just the product of the Chern number that characterizes the bulk topological superconductor, which in two dimensions is an integer, and the winding number of the vortex mod 2. Okay, and so this is sort of what we expect, which says that if we have an odd number of these vortices, we should have a zero mode. And so one can also think about this topological invariant characterizing these more complicated situations. Now, but now what we can realize is that these bound states of the Majorana boats, they're really existing in three dimensions. And so I can think of these zero modes as solutions of a three-dimensional Vogeluba-Dejean Hamiltonian. Just to make that explicit, one can write down a very simple model for this, which is so I want to have a model which describes the interface between a topological insulator and a trivial insulator. I can describe that by a Dirac theory, where the mass of the Dirac Hamiltonian changes sign when I go from the topological insulator to the trivial insulator. Okay, and so that's this domain wall where the mass changes sign is guaranteed to have the gapless topological insulator surface modes bound to this surface. But then I make those superconducting by putting on the real and imaginary parts of a superconducting pairing term, which opens up a gap. And so if I have a vortex in this superconducting pairing term, then we know that there's going to be a zero mode bound to that vortex. And if we think about this, though, what we really have is we have a three-dimensional Dirac Hamiltonian that has three different mass terms. Okay, so there's the mass term for the topological insulator, the real and imaginary parts of the superconductor, and those if I think of those mass terms as forming a vector, then this vector has a sort of a hedgehog topological defect at this Majorana bound state. Okay, and so if I think about this hedgehog, you can imagine moving this hedgehog around in three dimensions. Okay, let me just, I'll be almost done. So if you move this around in three dimensions, then this poses a question, which is what happens to the non-abelian braiding statistics that one has. So we like to believe that you can only have braiding statistics in two dimensions because all braids are trivial in three dimensions. And so the resolution of this, though, is the fact that these zero modes are occurring at topological defects in this field, okay, and so one can then ask, so when you exchange the topological, when you exchange these hedgehogs, you're deforming the field in which these things are living. Okay, and so one can, if you start off with a picture like this and you exchange them, you sort of deformed the field. And so what it's possible to do is it's possible to sort of let the field relax and get back to where you started. But what you find is that in the process of doing so, you have made one of the defects rotate by 2 pi. And that 2 pi, again, gives you my favorite minus sign. And that minus sign allows you to recover the sort of interchange rule for Ising anions. Okay? And so even though these things are being exchanged in 3 dimensions, one has this hallmark of non-abelian statistics. And so this is something which, so after we wrote this paper, the Microsoft Q group sort of went to town on this and did a much more mathematically rigorous and more complete description of this, which they called projective ribbon permutation statistics. And I think maybe with that, I won't talk about the fractional Josephson effect. And so let me just conclude. And say that, since it's late in the day, I'm not going to do the scientific conclusion, but just say the intersection of topology and condensed matter physics is both beautiful and physically important. Majorana fermions are cool. And so let's hope that at some future party that we can give Mike a birthday present, which might look like this. So thank you very much.
Okay, sorry, thank you.